Hello. Thanks everyone for coming. It is 1:15 and we will start in a few seconds. I see people still entering the room. This is a session about web application proxy. My name is Shai Kariv and my team is responsible also for other products for that are doing remote access, TMG and UEG. If you care about UEG and TMG, web application proxy, and those types of products and technologies, you're in the right session. There's beyond the overview, basically we're going to do two sections today in the presentation. The first one is about introducing again a technology that we shipped a few months ago as part of Windows Server 2012 R2 that went out GA'd in October of last year. And last year I was here talking about the preview of that technology and was telling you guys what's about to come and all of that. Today we're here to talk about what's out there, how people are responding, you know, how people are using this technology, some of the tips and tricks, and also what's coming in the future for that technology. So all of that within Windows Server. And the second part is about how we're taking this technology and developing it even more and putting it on the cloud and delivering it as a service for customers. And how this is taking the technology, the security value proposition, the deployment, and the experience of that technology to the next level. So let's do an overview of web application proxy. How many people here have heard about that, have heard me or someone else talking about that maybe last? Okay, so I'll do that relatively quick. It's about like 60% of you, as I can see. If there's questions, by the way, feel free to ask during the presentation. There's no need to wait for the very end. There's mics here, and even if you don't want to go to the mics, just shout it out, and I'll try to repeat and answer that. If you look at the big picture, really, as far as remote secure access to workplace applications or resources, there's three categories that we're hearing or we're seeing in the marketplace, really. It all starts with, you know, the user on the left-hand side and the various different devices that people are using today. We talked about that a lot this week in other presentations, in the keynotes as well. All these new types of BYO devices, these modern devices, and how people want to be productive and work anywhere on those devices, connect to their workplace applications. And so if you start from the bottom, sort of the basic, the classic, if you will, VPN and direct access type of technologies give you a pretty good solution today. They provide remote access for all kinds of applications over, you know, all the existing protocols, HTTP, SMB, everything else. You're basically in the network as if you're coming from the inside. The challenge that some of the customers have, and especially with the new types of BYO devices, is that, you know, with VPN, some of these devices are not capable sometimes to do VPN. Sometimes the IT department wants to control, they want to have it more selective. They don't want necessarily to have these devices. They're not always trusted. Sometimes they're personally owned. Sometimes they're not controlled by the IT department. They don't necessarily want these devices to have access to all of the network as if they're coming from inside. They want it to be more selective, so perhaps give access to some of the resources, some of the applications, and not all of them. That doesn't work well with VPN because you're either in or out. So, but it's a technology that works well. We continue to invest in that. There's new versions of it coming in the operating system, and it works. On the other end here, at the top, we see sort of the other extreme of remote access technology, and that's the VDI type remote access, where, you know, with the Windows Server technology, it'll be RDS or RDP type sessions. So many customers think of this as, you know, much more secure because it's not about downloading data to the client. It's really about downloading the pixels. So it's a technology for UI remoting, and it works nicely. And the issue with that, sometimes we're hearing from customers, is that, you know, as people bringing those new modern fancy devices and expect to do work on them, they also want to get the native experience. They want to work within the native app on the device or on the local browser. They don't want to VDI in or TS in or RDP in and have a different type of experience. So, you know, you win on the security side of the house, you lose some on the experience side of the house. with those VDI type solutions, but they work. They work well. Now, what we've done in Windows Server 12 R2 is we added a third category of remote access, and that's the web application proxy. So that's selective by nature. It's whitelisting. So as the IT admin, you have to selectively, explicitly publish endpoints or applications for external access. It's reverse proxy technology, works over HTTP, and we call it conditional access. Conditional because you could, as I said, it's very selective in nature, and we'll see in a second that you can control the policy, the access policy, per specific endpoint that you publish. So there's nothing really new about that. We had products that did things similar to that in the past. Like I said, UAG and TMG are two good examples of that. What's new about this one is the way it works with the other type of AD level investments for BYOD that you probably heard about from some of the other sessions, and I'll expand on that a little bit later on. And also, we built it into the operating system. So we're no longer investing or evolving the UAG, TMG type of products. We're actually building these things and continuing to evolve them in the operating systems in Windows Server. And as I said later on, I will be talking about the work that we're doing in Windows Azure. Now, web application proxy, at the highest level, there's two type of people or personas, if you will, that are involved. On the one hand, the information worker, this guy just wants to do his job and get done with it. So he doesn't want to bother about like experiences like connecting, let's say over a VPN or things like that, and deal with, establishing the connection to the workplace and all that. They want to work within their browser, within their application experience on the device. And so for them, it's just about accessing all types of applications, including the workplace applications and not only SaaS applications. You heard a lot about SaaS applications earlier in the week. But obviously most of the application, line of business applications today are still behind a corporate firewall. And so it's about accessing that from any device, from any network, Windows and non-Windows devices as well. Without even bothering about things like installing clients or things like that on the device, which makes it a little bit more difficult to connect remotely. So they just want to get done with their work with minimum pain. Now, we see a variety of devices. I'm talking about BYO-type devices. Obviously, we still see other more classic type of devices connecting remotely, internet kiosks, for example, or just your PC or laptop at home and things like that. So it's important to make sure that this technology work equally or consistently across all these types of devices. The device could be domain joined, it could be unjoined, or it could be workplace joined. So that's a new model that came out with Windows Server 12 R2. Probably heard that again in some of the other sessions. If not, I will talk about that a little bit later on. It's sort of like a lightweight, modern type of domain join for these BYO devices. And also the other thing that the information worker wants is just a single sign-on. They want to be maybe prompted once, but then have the ability to connect to various different workplace applications multiple times. Now, on the IT side of the house, you guys want to enable these workers to be productive and connect from anywhere, but at the same time, you want to control business risk. I mean, this goes back all the way to what we were talking about in the keynote session earlier this week on Monday. Enable productivity, but manage business risks to the company. So a lot of that is achieved via the selective nature of the publishing in web application proxy. So you can do one by one. You can turn on and off the publishing of specific applications. You could control access via a bunch of parameters. You could do that based on the user authentication, obviously, but also on the device authentication and the association of user and device. I'm going to be talking about that a little bit more. And that's something new with this technology, the ability to authenticate the device itself. And also the network location, like if you're coming from outside the network versus coming from inside the corporate network. So per application, per user, per device, per network location, and going forward, we'll add more parameters give you that flexibility and richness of authoring your access policy. Now, you also get better protection with something that we call pre-authentication, or you know, an old name for that would be front-end and back-end authentication. So as you try to connect, or as users try to connect to the network, to the internal network from an external source, at the proxy layer, at the perimeter of the network, we try to authenticate all these things that I was talking about, user, device, and so on. And if everything is good, we're letting you through all the way to the back end. If not, we stop you at the perimeter and not let you in. So that gives you the flexibility of publish even applications, internal applications that were not necessarily designed from day one to be, you know, to be externally accessed and have all these security measures and authentication, authorization, and all that type of stuff. You can deal with some of these security validations outside of the application. So the beauty in all that is that you don't need to change at all the existing applications. They continue to work, no code changes, no configuration changes whatsoever. And also, as I mentioned earlier, you don't need to touch the device in terms of installing agents on it or things like that. Clientless. This is a typical network topology, and so I want to kind of walk through some of the components here that are not maybe so trivial. So one thing you'll see obviously on the left-hand side is the client trying to connect from a browser, an office client, or a modern application. And then we have you know, the typical external firewall and load balancer. The technology that we shipped in Windows Server 12 R2 doesn't really have any like built-in load balancer capabilities or things like that. Things like that are coming in the future, but for now you'll have to continue to have your separate load balancer in front of Web Application Proxy. If you take a closer look, there's really within Web Application Proxy two components. One is the application proxy itself, which provides reverse proxy and pre-authentication services, and we'll talk about them a little bit more in a second. But the other piece is the ADFS proxy piece of it. If you're used to working with ADFS proxy, like ADFS 1 or 2, in Windows Server 12 R2, you no longer have an ADFS proxy role service like you had prior to that. It's like an internal component of Web Application Proxy. So don't be surprised if you're upgrading from a down level or a previous operating system to Windows Server 12 R2 and you don't see ADFS proxy. It's there. It's within the Web Application Proxy component. Now, on the back end, a typical configuration or topology would be that you have a back end server and many times a load balancer tier in front of that farm. And also you have your AD infrastructure with ADFS. So ADFS is here because it provides the service of the pre-authentication service, basically. So we'll go into more detail in a few more slides about how exactly the technical flow works, but there is a dependency here for pre-authentication on ADFS, and that's going to be ADFS 3 that's built into Windows Server 12 R2. Pre-authentication and also the configuration of Web Application Proxy. The proxy itself is stateless. The configuration is stored at the ADFS tier. So this image is maybe oversimplifying, but the reality will be that you could have like one or more Web Application Proxy so that you have this farm, and they all go against the same ADFS server at the back end. The other thing worth mentioning here is the type of authentication or pre-authentication methods that Web Application Proxy supports today. So there's four. Claims, obviously, but the big deal is KCD, Kerberos. So again, most of the existing line of business applications that you have on your corporate network support, expect Windows Integrated Authentication, specifically Kerberos, and that could be achieved. This protocol translation could be achieved via Web Application Proxy, and that would be one of the main use cases for Web Application Proxies to do this pre-authentication using KCD. If you are doing KCD, then the proxy server needs to be domain joined. That would be the only case that you will need to have the Web Application Proxy machine domain joined. All other cases, it could be non-domain join, which I know was, again, a big sort of customer requirement or customer ask in the days of UEG, TMG, and so on. So the other two pre-authentication methods would be the Microsoft Office Forms-Based Authentication, MSO, FBA, and OAuth as well. The fifth, if you will, is no pre-authentication, and we call it pass-through. So that would be a basic network topology. As far as some of the, I call them fundamental services that you really get from this technology, I kind of divide them to two, reverse proxy and pre-authentication. Let's start with the reverse proxy side of the house. And when we walk through the reverse proxy services, let's just assume for a second that it's all password. There's no pre-authentication. They stand on their own. So even standing on their own, you know, you get this network isolation. Because you have, even in the pass-through, you get this proxy in between that terminates the incoming request and establishes a new connection to the backend. So malformed packets and attacks of that sort are typically stopped at the proxy layer. So you get security value out of the box, even with pass-through authentication. Even after you're doing pre-authentication and subsequent requests continue to hit your proxy, you still have that benefit of network. Everything gets terminated by the proxy. I guess that would be the security value here. So network isolation. Basic denial of service protection as well. So throttling, queuing, session establishing, before it even gets routed for the first time to the backend would be another security value to highlight here. URL translation. So, apps that are sort of well-written and while they're deployed, like if they're deployed internally on the network and they expect to be accessed over what I call an internal, like short URL, like not fully qualified domain name URL. An example would be HTTP, WAC, say HR, or My SharePoint or My App or something like that. So it's not fully qualified domain name. You can still publish those applications. So you specify an FQDN URL name for the externally public URL, and you keep the internal URL, and you got this service to translate between the public one and the internal one. So we'll see in the demo how exactly that works. And the other thing that you get as part of that is that you could publish, like your external endpoint could be a secure one, HTTP over SSL, port 443, so HTTPS, WAC, something, while you could continue to keep the internal one HTTP. Some applications are totally fine to be HTTP. They don't have sensitive data, and so, like, for people who come from within the network, you know, there's many line of business applications that don't require SSL. But you could still add that SSL layer of security if you want external users to be, that channel to be encrypted. So HTTPS to HTTP is another service that we're getting as part of that. Selective publishing, we talked about that, and ADFS proxy services as well. So regardless even of publishing applications, if you just want to kind of get through to one specific endpoint, which is ADFS on your on-prem, you will use the web application proxy to get through to that one as well. The integration work here between the proxy and ADFS gives you additional things like, you know, obviously, federation services, but also things like multi-factor authentication, device registration service. Again, was mentioned in some of the other sessions. I'll touch on that as well a little bit later on. And so you get all that because ADFS 3 knows how to work, very integrated manner with web application proxy. So all of those are good. The constraints, if you will, at least in this version, is we focus on modern protocols, so web protocols only, HTTP, HTTPS. So we're talking about like comparing VPN to web application proxy. I said one of the good things about VPN is really support of all the existing legacy protocols, and not necessarily only HTTP. With web application proxy, it's limited today, as the name implies, to web protocols. If this is like a feedback point from you guys. I will definitely want to hear about that. Mostly we're hearing from customers that this is good because they do want to kind of focus as they move forward, as they're seeing some of the, you know, big Microsoft workloads as well going over HTTP. So some of the, you know, or all of the Office applications, for example, are going and, you know, and building access over HTTP or HTTPS in this case. So we think this is a good thing. On the pre-authentication side, reach policy, and those would be ADFS managed policy, and I'll show a demo of how exactly that gets done. As I said, multiple options for second factor and multi-factor authentication, smart cards based, phone factor integration, soft password lockout, and many of the other things that keep coming from ADFS. They are all available as is to web application proxy configuration. And we touched on the multiple authentication methods and SSO as well. So once you're pre-authenticated, you don't have to pre-authenticate again. You have that single sign-on experience. Now, as I said, this is all based, implemented on top of a dedicated security token from ADFS, so we have that dependency. I get that question a lot. Like, can we do web application proxy without ADFS? So in Windows Server, in the current version, we cannot. You have that dependency that I was talking about. On the Azure side of the house, which I will talk about later, you can definitely do without ADFS. We'll talk about that later. Let's take a look at Windows Server specifically. So as I said, Windows Server 12 R2, there's a new role service. Now that rolls up under a Windows Server role. The Windows Server role that we chose to put this technology under is ARAS, or I think it stands for Routing and Remote Access Services. So this is sort of the place for technologies like VPN and DNS, basically things that customers deploy in the DMZ, typically by network IT department or persona. So we thought it kind of makes sense to integrate the deployment, the management experience as well under ARAS. So again, we'll see that in the demo as well. So look for ARAS, and under ARAS, you know, beyond VPN and direct access, you will find a new thing called Web Application Proxy. So it's integrated into Windows Server Manager and the ARAS admin experience, and that includes both UI, obviously, but also PowerShell. I'm emphasizing this because, again, back in the UAG, TMG days, we got this thing a lot. You know, people were expecting to have PowerShell support and, like, really fundamental sort of, like, things that you would expect from a Windows or from a platform component. And so now they have that. The other thing on this slide, as I said, there's a new model that we call Workplace Join, which is like a lightweight domain join. And I will not go very deeply into that in this session. It's being covered in other ADFS sessions, but the idea is that you can take your typically personal devices, modern devices, BYO type devices, and not domain join them, but make them known to the directory and end up with, so there's a process called registration, hence the service device registration service or DRS, and via that you end up with a certificate on the device and a new record in Active Directory, in the schema that you get with Windows Server 12 R2, it's a new record, not a new object, that really corresponds to that certificate. And by that, every time you have an external access request coming from that device, we could do the association on the back end between the user, the authenticated user, and the device, and see if that's valid, again, depending on the policy that you're setting. So that whole new DRS / workplace join model was introduced in Windows Server 12 R2. The other things here, conditional access, I think we covered that as well, and the authentication methods again, so we can skip that. Okay, I'm gonna run through a bunch of slides relatively quickly because some of you guys saw that, the previous sessions. And this is about like explaining the technical flow here. Again, oversimplified, obviously, but like what's going on. So on the left-hand side, we have the user and the device, application proxy in the middle. And as I said, on the right-hand side, what we've got here is we've got a line of business application. Let's assume, for example, that just like I said, it is expecting Kerberos authentication. So Windows Integrated Authentication over Kerberos. And let's say that the way for people to access that application from the internal network would be to call into HTTP. And note that will be HTTP, not HTTPS. HTTP, WAC, WAC, LOB. Line of business. And also, obviously, we have the AD infrastructure and ADFS in front of it, and the application policies that come with ADFS. And one relying party that we will see within ADFS is the web application proxy itself, because web application proxy to ADFS is yet just another relying party. So you will see it there. So as we start the journey, the first thing you want to do is you want to ensure that there's a way for the client device to actually hit your backend STS to do the pre-authentication. So here's the fully qualified domain name that is used internally for publishing the STS. And typically it'll be like HTTPS and then STS dot, typically your company name, dot com. And you want to publish that over the proxy layer as well for remote access. So there's two layers here, internal and external access. And the user sends a request for accessing, or sorry, before the user does that, you actually want to publish, again, this fully qualified domain name URL for external access of the LOB. So that would be typically HTTPS LOB dot, in this case, your company's fabricam.com. All right, the client tries to access, gets a redirect, an HTTP redirect to the STS endpoint to do the pre-authentication. Now, at the back end, at the ADFS side, we do the computation, look up the application policy for that endpoint, and typically get back to the client with like a challenge request, which then the client comes back and passes the credentials, and in turn, ADFS does a lookup typically in AD, again, for that device record that I was talking about and the user credentials in AD. If everything is good, then on the query string, a token, an STS token, is being passed back to the client, implemented as an HTTP, an encrypted HTTP cookie, which the client goes and passes now back on the query string to the proxy. And the proxy does the evaluation of whether or not this token is good. And if everything is good, this is the first time ever in this entire flow that the backend application is actually being accessed, but by the proxy, not directly by the client, the original client session. Question? If the record is stored in the user account, are you talking about the record of the device? So the question was, is this record stored in the user object in Active Directory? And the answer is not. But we store both the information about the device, but also about the user, so that we know to do this association. It's stored in Active Directory, and the information that gets stored is the hash of the certificate that ends up on the device, but also the association between that device and the user itself.
I have a question as well.
Yes.
Yeah,
the question was if ADFS could be a 2.1, and unfortunately you'll have to upgrade to 3.0. The good news is, so that's about ADFS. I think the good news there is AD itself could be that you don't have to upgrade to the Windows Server 12 R2 schema version. You don't have to upgrade to the full Windows Server 12 R2 AD, but you have to upgrade the schema for it. Okay.
And also, does this support NTLM backend application?
The question was, does that support NTLM? The answer is no. At least in the current version, we support Kerberos only. And everything else that I mentioned, claims and auth and all of that. But as far as Windows Integrated Authentication, only KCD in this version. We're trying to decide if we want to add NTLM or not. We have like a backlog of authentication methods that we do want to add. NTLM is on that list, and we'll see if we actually get to add that in the next version. Yeah. All right. So just to kind of finish that flow, in this, as I said, this is the first time that the application on the back end gets
being accessed. And this is a KCD authentication, so it replies with a 401. And at this point, the proxy does a lookup. The proxy itself, as I said, at this point for KCD is domain join and is trusted for KCD delegation. So the proxy is doing the lookup in AD on behalf of the user. And again, if everything is good, then a ticket is granted, application being accessed, response from that application goes all the way back to the user and is being used, or that token is being used again and again in subsequent requests until it expires by default in 8 hours. And just to kind of finish the whole thing, if we get back to the beginning, as I said, this is a little bit oversimplified. The other things that are going on here is beyond the two relying parties that you see there for the LOB application and web application proxy itself. There's a third relying party that you will see in the real world, and that's for that device registration service that I was mentioning. And beyond the relying party, it has to be accessed from externally as well. And so the typical URL for that would be https://enterprise-enrollment.yourcompany.com. So you will see that both internally and externally exposed over the web application proxy. Okay, and that's and you know, these little green things represent the certificate, the device certificate that ends up after you do DRS on the device, and the record that gets created in Active Directory to represent that certificate. Is there a question? Yes. Yeah, the question was, since the proxy has to be domain joined, what does it mean about the internal firewall? Do we have to open ports and all of that? So I want to emphasize, in the case of KCD, yes, that will be the case. In all other cases, claims, OAuth, and MSOFBA, and some of the other authentication methods that we're going to add in the next version, the answer would be, no, it doesn't have to do anything. It could be even non-domain joined at all. Did that answer your question?
Then how does... I guess the question I then have would be, if I'm going to use Active Directory for keeping track of the users and computers, how are they going to be authenticated? You're saying through, this could be a certificate claims-based authentication?
I don't know that I understand exactly.
How is the proxy server going to then authenticate an internal user, or a user, not an internal user, but if I'm a domain user and have a domain join computer, I'm in the outside and I'm going in, how's it going to get authenticated by Active Directory? Because it normally uses Kerberos and or NTLM. Is it going to use a claims-based certificate authentication? Or?
Yeah. I think you're asking about for the non-KCD type of authentication.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
How do we look up the user object? So definitely we're going to use claims, and for OAuth and MSOFBA, it'll work slightly differently. There's something called, I don't want to get too much into that, we'll talk about it offline, but there's something called protocol translation. And on the front end to the user, it'll look like we're doing claims. Within the claims themselves, you will have to pass the information about the user credentials, so username and domain name and password. So that's, it looks like a claim-based authentication. At the end of the day, internally, we do like a back-end authentication against AD with the actual user credentials.
And if you do it that way, do you have to poke holes into other than HTTPS,
no.
Do you have to poke holes in the firewall?
No. The question was, if we do it that way with over claims, do we have to poke holes in the firewall, I guess would be. The question, the answer is no.
Cool.
Let me take a few minutes and show you how it looks like. So, okay. So we have a machine here. The first thing I want to show is the actual ADFS3 management console. So you get to it from the traditional Windows Server Manager. And again, in some of the other sessions, we spent more time explaining exactly all the new things here. One thing I want to highlight here, because again, we're talking about the ADFS side of the house first, is there's a new thing under relying parties that is exactly for enabling this web application proxy Kerberos or KCD pre-authentication, and we call it adding non-claims aware relying party. Okay?
This is a new thing in Windows Server 12 R2. Let's walk quickly through this, and let's add, for example, SP1 RP. And again, it'll be a KCD RP because it's a new type. Let's call it SP1 Contasa.com. Let's add it to the list of RPs. Notice this is an ADFS wizard, so it asks you if you want to configure MFA at this point or not. We'll skip that. That's outside the scope of our demo here. And we're going to go ahead and publish that. Okay, so that was pretty simple. I just created a new type of relying party in ADFS 3, and I called it SP1, and it'll honor KCD. Okay, we'll jump to this machine, and this is a machine with web application proxy. So you go to Server Manager, the standard thing. There's nice integration here in the experience of the web application proxy, event log events, services, and even things like BPA rules and perf counters as well with Server Manager. We'll skip those and we'll show you how to launch the new under Remote Access Management is where you'll find the RS admin console, as I said. I already have it up and running here. And again, this is a simple configuration without, in this case, for simplicity of the demo, we have only web application proxy configured here. In other cases, you can see here VPN and direct access as well here on the left-hand side. You could do things like, and again, it's the standard RS admin experience for things like operational status or health monitoring of the components. Again, in this case, I only have web application proxy installed on this box, so we only see it and we don't see VPN. And then we see internally the two components, ADFS proxy and web application proxy. In our case here, they're all looking good. If they weren't looking good, you would see red and you could drill down on what exactly was the issue. If you go to configuration, which is what we want to do here, we want to publish a new application for external access based on that new RP that we just configured on the ADFS level. And so I already got a bunch of application endpoints published here. Pretty simple. Application has a name, an external URL, backend or internal URL, and the pre-authentication method. So pass-through or ADFS integrated. If it's ADFS integrated, it'll fetch the type of the pre-authentication method from the configuration on the RP. And then I have a bunch of tasks that I can do on the right-hand side. Let's go ahead and publish a new application. Two basic modes, either pass-through or ADFS integrated authentication. So in this case, let's do ADFS. Okay, so what's happening now is it goes and it fetches the list of RPs from ADFS, and it already gives it to me here. This is the RP that we just created a minute ago, SP1, so let's go ahead and choose that. And it'll use that. Now, for the proxy to work, as I said, the basic four properties is a name for simplicity. Let's give it the name SP1 even here. On this layer, it doesn't have to be, it could be any other name. External URL, as I said, typically HTTPS, something like that. Choose a certificate for it. And let's just demo the case of a short URL. So HTTP over port 80 and SP1. What we saw just a second ago there is something we call validation. So we have this built-in validation. If the URL is not valid, that's what it's warning me here in the red. If it's a short URL, not super typical, so some customers appreciate if we kind of give them like a yellow warning that the internal and external URLs do not match. That's fine. We know what we're doing here. And since this is KCD, we'll give it a service principal name. And that's my favorite part, is just as it's about to publish, it shows you the PowerShell script or commandlet that the UI will call to do that. The reason I like that is because you kind of select it and copy, and then if you're like a script or a PowerShell guy, you can just learn from the UI what exactly, how exactly to build the commandlets, and then you can kind of use that and like script against that. I can open up a PowerShell commandlet and kind of paste that script into it, and it'll work just as well. So let's go ahead and publish. Okay, so that was pretty simple. All right, so we see it here, and we'll get back to that, but pretty dead simple, like a wizard of like 2-3 steps, and the piece I showed at the beginning about ADFS is something that you will have to do anyways for managing internal access from within the internal network to your application. So that was the experience for publishing applications over a web application proxy within Windows Server. In terms of performance, that's another, there's a question, yes. Okay, so the question was whether we're going to use that SPN to automatically set KCD. The answer, unfortunately, is no. You still have to do that configuration. I didn't show that in the demo. I know it's quite complex. We'll get a little about that as well. But that for applications that are configured for KCD, for even like, you know, internal access, you'll have to do that anyways. There's nothing specific or like additional that Web Application Proxy adds. I know that KCD configuration is not the easiest thing, but we don't do any automation there at all. Let's talk about performance for a second, because I get that a lot as well, in terms of, again, comparing with some of the other products that we had in the past. So, you know, we published the full specs of our perf lab results, thousands of requests per second for entry-level hardware. It's CPU-bound, mostly due to SSL processing, and the latency that is added by the proxy is negligible. Couple milliseconds, so this is pretty good. The parameters that make the difference in terms of perf are the transaction, the payload size, basically, the type of pre-authentication. Obviously, KCD costs more perf-wise than pass-through. HTTPS, so SSL processing, yes or no, and the size of the SSL certificate. So, we're not going to walk through this entire thing, but this is basically the categories of hardware specs that we're measuring performance against. You'll have that in the slides. You can kind of take a deeper look at that later on. And again, as expected, with the increase of the payload size, the number of requests per second decreases as well. 16,000 is the number that we measured on really entry-level hardware with Keep Alive on, HTTPS, standard SSL certificate size of 2Ks, and really no fine-tuning whatsoever, which is just a big difference. When you start fine-tuning the system, we measured up to 25,000-30,000 requests per second quite easily. So we feel pretty good about the performance of the proxy from that perspective. Let's talk about some of the experience, again, a few months after shipping this technology in Windows Server. Important for me to emphasize that unlike, for example, UEG, we in the Web Application Proxy, we absolutely don't have any tailored code that is specific to an application or application version. It's just generic. Every type of HTTP type application will work against the application proxy. And this is why we don't need to have any type of client installed on the device. However, I do want to kind of walk through some of the main office workloads and talk about some of the known issues and sort of tips and tricks there. So for SharePoint, definitely lots of customers using SharePoint or a web application proxy to publish SharePoint. SharePoint itself could be configured either with claims or with Kerberos. Both work well with web application proxy. The one known issue, I will say, is SharePoint has this relatively new feature. It's called SharePoint Dynamic Apps. And in some configurations, each one of these apps has its own URL, like and Right? It's like its own unique URL. And you can use the web application proxy to publish them, but you'll need to do that one by one. We don't have that smart in the application proxy.
I thought apps don't support Kerberos. Apps only support NTLM.
That could be the case. The comment was that apps do not support KCD. I don't know. You could be absolutely right. Yeah, I'm making a distinction between SharePoint, generally speaking, SharePoint sites that support KCD and claims, and apps, which you could be absolutely right. I know less about. As I said, the support for publishing apps is sort of functional, but difficult to scale because each requirement, at least in the configuration of every app requiring its own URL, you kind of have to do that one by one with a proxy. The way for us to deal with that going forward is to support what we call wildcard publishing, just like in the example here. It's like star.apps.contoso.com. That'll solve the problem really nicely and allow you to publish SharePoint apps for external access over one object in web application proxy. So we don't have that quite yet. We're working on that. That's coming in the next version of web application proxy. So that's SharePoint. With respect to Exchange, you know, OWA can definitely be published, and you can use the web application proxy to do pre-authentication with KCD or with claims if you have SP1. It all works. The frequent thing that I'm hearing from customers is the desire to publish Exchange Active Sync with pre-authentication. You can publish Exchange Active Sync today, but with pass-through only. If you want pre-authentication for that, we don't quite have it today, but we're working on that. We already have that coded. We're going to ship that in the next version of the application proxy. Last but not least is about Link. The interesting thing there with Link, you can use web application proxy to publish Link. Some of the Link services require publishing over pure HTTP over port 80, which is something the proxy doesn't support today. Today we're very secure. You could publish only over port 443, HTTPS. but turns out that for some applications, some of the Link services, a good example, customers want to relax that, and they're okay publishing over external pure HTTP endpoints over port 80. So again, we have a fix for that, and that's coming as well down the road in the next version. These are the sort of the big known issues with some of the main applications or workloads that people publish with web application proxy.
So when you talk about the next version, is there a rough timeline? Are you talking about Windows 2017, or are you talking about couple months
from now? Yeah, the question is, when I'm talking about next version, when is next? I'm not here to disclose anything that wasn't disclosed in some of the other sessions. It's going to be part of the next version of Windows Server. But I think you heard many times in the past that we're now more or less on sort of a yearly release cadence. So it's not too far out. It's yearly release cadence. Do the math. Give or take a few months. It's coming very quickly. It's not going to be 17. It's not going to be 16. All right. So lastly, with respect to application proxy in Windows Server, what else is coming? Speaking about the future and all that. So let's take a look at some of the things I haven't mentioned. So the first one is probably irrelevant as of today. We issued a fix for that, by the way. So just there's the certificate that we're using. Customers expect certificates to sort of roll over automatically and renew themselves. And we didn't quite have that when we shipped it back in October. We have that as of today. This is an update from a few hours ago. So let's not worry about that. As I mentioned, pre-authentication for Exchange Active Sync and Outlook Anywhere, top of the list for sure. HTTP publishing over port 80, we just mentioned that one as well. HTTP to HTTPS redirection. So this is interesting. Not a huge thing, but customers are a little bit annoyed by that. So they want, if the client or the user tried to access over HTTP and the endpoint is actually HTTPS, they would want to have this automatic redirection capability, which they cannot do today with web application proxy. They need to actually stick an IIS server in between to do that fairly basic redirection, which is not a good thing. So we'll build that into the next version of the application proxy. Okay, wildcard publishing, we mentioned that SharePoint was a good use case. There's other use cases as well where you want to have like one object that has like star bindings in it and it represents more than one internal application. So we're building that one as well. Built-in integration with load balancer, especially on the back-end side of the house, if you recall that network topology slide to the head with a separate load balancer. So that thing is coming as well. URL translation, like full URL translation in the body as well, in the HTTP body as well, and not only at the header level. It's something we're working on. Extensibility, that's an interesting one for those of you who develop either in-house or maybe provide like ISV, like third-party ISV services. People want a way to extend some of the functionality, some of the logging capabilities, some of the things like that. So we're looking at doing that for the next version as well. I'd be happy to get feedback on that one specifically, which we're sort of like building it these days. And other sort of like integration with other workloads, top of mind are API management. If you guys attended the keynote session back on Monday, there was a short demo there about like a new API management service, an Azure service, and also RDS as well. So how do we let you publish these things securely over web application proxy without worrying about installing and operating too many moving pieces on the network perimeter, and instead just one thing, which is web application proxy. So we're working on that one as well. Last but not least is how do we go beyond sort of the classic HTTP 1.1 into forward-looking protocols, WebSockets, HTML5, HTTP 2.0, and things like that. Okay. So maybe one of the most exciting things that we're doing with this technology, on top of everything else that I just mentioned, is we're building that as a service. And that's got some unique advantages in terms of value proposition. Let's talk about that. So as a service, the classic benefits, really easy to deploy. You have minimal operation deployment headaches. And the reason is because most of it runs on the cloud. You have to deploy absolutely zero components on the DMZ. You do have to deploy one component, like a connector deployment. We'll talk about that in a second. But that's outside of the DMZ. And that's like a game changer, because DMZ is a sensitive controlled environment, typically operated by the network IT department. All of that is going away when you kind of switch from the version of web application proxy in Windows Server to the one in the cloud. Second benefit is more secure. I mean, think about it, really. All the pre-authentication, all these security validations are done at the cloud before it even hits your network perimeter. So we kind of block the attacks and the malformed traffic and all of these things, or even just plain, failed authentication requests on the cloud before it gets to your tenant. You don't have to deal with that at all, not on the back end and not on the sort of like firewall level infrastructure. And denial of service as well is like taking it to the next level by using the elasticity of the cloud. So everything that gets routed to your, or at least the specific select applications that you chose to route through that Azure application proxy, goes through the Azure infrastructure. So things like denial of service and so on are easier for us with cloud scale to deal with for you before it hits your tenant or your network. Last but not least is the deep integration with Azure Active Directory. In fact, this is going to be like a feature of Azure Active Directory. Now, we talked a lot this week about Azure Active Directory. You saw a bunch of demos of that. And so this is really the forward-looking platform for us to kind of look at in terms of some of the richness of the capabilities and the experiences that we're developing there. So, and you probably saw in some of the demos the myapps.microsoft.com, that whole, we call it the access panel experience, where you get to discover the application and some of the other things we were talking about in other presentations, like the group and some of the other things that are available for you. And so we, in the other sessions, really emphasize how you could log into myapps.microsoft.com and see some of the SaaS applications that you could go ahead and use. Well, guess what? With this feature, you could you will see there also the on-prem applications that were published for you by your company. So Access Panel Discovery and SSO, SaaS and on-prem applications as well. And if you guys recall in the keynote, some other sessions, we took a closer look at some of the machine learning based reports that we have in Azure AD. So, you know, and you know, turning into analytics and insights. So those will run as well on, you know, on-prem or access into your on-prem applications. So you'll get that, some of that benefit as well. And all the other integrations that you have in AAD, multi-factor authentication, device registration, and also ADFS proxy that we mentioned, you know, with Windows Server, I said that there's like this internal component of ADFS proxy. Well, with this cloud version of it, we built the ADFS proxy as a cloud component as well. So even if you want to, even if the only thing you want to do is to, again, get through to your on-prem ADFS server at the back end, you no longer have to deploy ADFS proxy at all on the DMZ or anywhere because you get that from the cloud. So I guess the summary of that is it's built for the cloud design point. It's available for Azure AD premium customers. So how does that work? We have what we call the cloud connector pattern. It's not unique to this technology. You get to see that more and more with other technologies as well. But let's take a minute and explain how that works. So basically, as you're seeing, let me try to zoom in on that. As you see on the right-hand side, nothing is deployed on the DMZ. You could deploy one or more connectors, really up to you. It's a scale unit on the back end. That's a benefit. And those, in turn, connect with an outgoing HTTP connection to the application proxy in the cloud. And that application proxy listens, really, on incoming requests from client. And knows to do that session management type of like handling that incoming request from the device and taking you know that request and using it on the reply back to the connector. So the effect of this is that there's no really from the standpoint of your application, you don't really listen to the internet here. You have a connector that initiates an outgoing session and waits back on an incoming reply. We'll take a closer look at this architecture in the next slide. Better security, there's no incoming requests. You don't listen on the internet. You don't have to open anything on the firewall. You don't have to deal with that. Simple and lightweight on-prem deployment. You do have to install that connector, but you have all that flexibility. Obviously, most of the computation, most of the complexity is done in the cloud. The thing that you have to kind of operate and configure and all of that is more cloud stuff, and even that is being done for you for the most part. And so in terms of scale and perf and all of that, there's much less load on the connector itself. It gives you, as I said, minimal operation. It could be your IT department. It could be other people that you delegate to install and operate that connector. I mean, that could be like a business owner, a department, or anything else. You don't have to manage that yourself. Heck, you can even build that into like some of your line of business applications to have their own like custom connector code that knows how to do that handshake with the application proxy. It's not terribly complicated. As I said, most of the logic is done on the cloud side of the house. KCD, for example, would be one exception where you will need to trust an on-prem component for KCD. So for the KCD case, you will need to delegate KCD to the connector in this case, obviously. But other than that, most of the other routing configuration type options are done in the cloud. Question?
Is this a new announcement today? Because I'm going to this
Okay, the question is this a new announcement from today? it's not really a new announcement. We're working on that for quite some time. We talked about that with people. This is going out in preview in June, so it's not quite ready today. We do have a program today. We call it private preview. So some of the customers by invitation, or if they want, kind of connect with us, and they're using that. But it's not quite ready yet. In June, it's really soon. We're going to have that as a public preview on Azure, and everyone will get to see that. And then we'll do all the formal announcements and blog posts and all that type of stuff. So it's coming, and we're excited about that. So to finish that one off, in terms of how many connectors do you need, it's really up to you. I mean, you can start with one per tenant. You can go all the way, to the extreme of like one per application if you want to.
Sorry, can those connectors be from differing sites, like one in a branch office and one local?
Exactly. That's exactly the case. The comment was, do we want, can we think of these connectors coming from like different branches and different like geos and all that? Absolutely, yes. That would be a good use case for having, multiple connectors.
Will it support workplace join?
I say again?
Will it support workplace join?
Will it support workplace join? Absolutely, yes. Not in the June preview, because we're starting with like something basic that has pass-through authentication, but very quickly after. I mean, that's the beauty of the cloud. You do the cloud development cycles, and so definitely the idea there is support workplace join and all the pre-authentication methods that I was talking about in the Windows Server section. Yes?
Do you have a plan for when it's going to reach feature parity with on-prem?
Feature parity. It will reach feature parity in the next, 6 to 12 months would be my assessment. The thing is, on the Windows Server side of the house, we continue some of the other features that I was explaining, like, for example, Exchange Active Sync pre-authentication. So there will be a period where, Windows Server, we kind of have it today. We build the next version of that. The cloud is something that we're going to announce preview next month, so they're not at the same party, but it'll catch up and, you will have this. Like, for the long run, they will pretty much have the same party. Some things will be unique for the cloud. Examples would be the machine learning type reports that I was mentioning, some of the AAD integration, myapps.microsoft.com integration. Some of these things are unique to the cloud, but as far as other features, we'll just build them in both places. And you have all these considerations of, do I choose cloud or Windows Server, depending on all these parameters that I was talking about.
Would there probably be like a more automatic integration with things like MFA, like phone factor, for example?
Absolutely. So the comment was, can we expect more on the cloud version of it, automation or integration with things like the Azure multi-factor authentication, the phone factor service, things like that? Answer is absolutely yes. All right, so the only other thing I wanted to mention on this one is the architecture of the connector itself is stateless. There's no state there. State is in the cloud. That's another sort of difference in the architecture between the cloud version and the Windows Server version. Whereas, as you guys recall, the Windows Server version, we had the state in the back end stored within ADFS. The cloud version, all of that is going away, and it's all in the cloud. So let me do this one real quick. Again, it's a few slides that kind of explain real quick the flow here. It's pretty simple, and then I'll do a demo for a few minutes. So it starts with the connectors. In this case, we see two tenants on the upper right and lower right. And they kind of spin up and connect, register, and start to send these outgoing requests to the cloud application proxy. User device sends a request. In this case, let's first do the flow, the basic flow of pass-through, no pre-authentication, which, as you could expect, gets queued, routed to the appropriate tenant, to the connector in this case, as you can see, one of them, on the tenant on-prem itself, which in turn goes all the way back to the application. You can, the response is being routed back to the to the original client. Okay. In terms of pre-authentication, the only new thing that happens here, and again, let's do all that routing, is you get that redirect, pretty similar to the HTTP redirect that we showed on the Windows Server side. And then in this case, what we're showing here in this slide is you're doing the pre-authentication against Azure AD itself, the cloud version of the SDS. So that looks fairly simple. There's a more complicated use case where you want to redirect the client to the actual tenant's on-prem ADFS to do the pre-authentication. We can do that one as well. I don't show that on the slide, but you can do that one as well. So once the pre-authentication got done, there's a token, the token being passed all the way through to the backend application, and the response gets back. I did that pretty quickly. If you want to kind of walk through that more slowly with me, we can do that maybe after the presentation. I want to make sure we have 9 minutes left that I'll show you a demo. I think it'll be more useful. Okay, so this should look familiar. This is Azure AD. Real quick to kind of briefly mention some of the features that you saw mentioned over and over this week is, the reports, you guys recall, were here. Some of the configuration options for Azure AD, the domains, you can have multiple of them, applications, typically in some of the other sessions you were looking at SaaS applications here, and so on. Let's do this. Let's go to configuration. Now I'm using here, a demo environment of something that's not in production yet. But you will see available as preview, again for premium customers, a new thing that's called application proxy within the configuration. So two modes, enabled or disabled. It's enabled, you gotta have it enabled to use the technology. The other thing you'll have to do is you'll have to click here. Let me try to zoom it on this one here. Okay. To download the connector and install it, if you need to download more than one, you'll have to come back here and do that again. Okay. So this is how you turn the thing on. You go to applications, and so again, pretty simple. I have one application already published here. It's got a name and a bunch of other properties. If you add a new one, the wizard will look super simple. So the first two options are familiar to you from, this is what you have today in Azure AD. The new thing that's coming in preview is publish an on-prem application. Doesn't have to be literally on-prem. The idea is that it's behind it's like on an internal network. Even in the demo, I'm not using an on-prem application. I will use something that's in the cloud as a VM. So let's see how that works. Click that, give it a name. Let's call it FabriChem. That's like a website that I have, and I'll use that as an application. So we did this quick validation that the name is unique for this tenant. And then, again, let's try to zoom in. The external URL is important. Now you can either use the existing built-in URL. It ends with msappproxy.net, preceded by your we sort of craft this URL that's based on the name that he just gave, FabriChem, dash, in this case, it'll be the environment of your tenant. In this specific demo environment, I call the tenant CWAP test do, and it's a PP environment. But you can also choose your own custom domain name. So like if your company is Contoso, you would call it, say, app1.contoso.com. That can work as well. For simplicity, let's take the existing one. And let me copy that to the clipboard. HTTP versus HTTPS, we kind of talked about that. Internal URL, let me choose just pure HTTP, FabriChem, that's available. And go ahead and publish that. Okay, so it went through. You can see the properties here. Now, in this case, it was really simple because it's only pass-through. We still don't have the other types of more sophisticated pre-authentication with KCD and things like that, so you really have only three simple properties, and that's going to be the situation as we enter public preview next month, and as the gentleman asked, we're going to beef it up pretty quickly with other types of pre-authentication methods, so we'll expect to see more of that in the experience. And to test all of that, let me just paste it into the browser. Now the thing is when I publish the application, it actually kicked off, in this case, for demo purposes, the application is an Azure website. So that takes a few seconds to spin up. Let's see if it's available. All right, that's a very simple static HTML page, and in this case, that would be my Fabricom demo application. Let's go back to the configuration, and just disable the proxy itself. So that will block access to all of the applications that are published with the proxy. The interesting thing, maybe in the experience that's worth showing here, is as we go to the application, so I still have the applications. You know, I can turn the proxy, toggle it on and off. All the configuration is there. If you go, for example, to this one specifically, Fabricom, I'll get this you know, notification. Application currently unreachable because the application proxy is disabled in your directory. Go to the configuration, configure tab to enable it back on.
So we're going to make it so you can disable one without turning off everything?
Yeah, question was, can you disable one and not, you know, not everything? So absolutely, yes. So you can expect to see things like edit, you know, the properties of the application, disable the state of that application and things like that. Again, I'm showing like an early preview version, which is what we have today. And again, that takes a few seconds, a few good seconds to kind of throw that out of the cache. If we go ahead and hit refresh, I would expect to get a 404 not found here, and that'll kick in a few seconds, hopefully. Okay. As you'd expect. So that was a quick look at what's coming really pretty quickly in terms of the Azure flavor of the application proxy. So with that, I think we're pretty much done. I think the summary is, you know, this is sort of the forward-looking technology to use for select conditional access to your workplace application. There's a version ready today in Windows Server 12 R2. You know, next version of that is coming pretty quickly. And also the thing that we're really excited about is the cloud or Azure version of that that's coming next month. The typical resources and call to action to do session evaluation. And with that, we have a few minutes for questions.
So are all the new features going to come out in a big bang release, or is it going to be one thing at a time?
Are we going to do a big bang or one thing at a time? On the Windows Server side of the house, it's going to be like a big bang thing, like a Windows Server vNext, as I said, pretty quickly as well. And on the cloud, it will be incremental. So the first thing is pass-through, and then pre-authentication and DRS integration and some of these other things that we were mentioning. Yes?
There are going to be easy ways to migrate settings from an on-premise
deployment. Right. The question was, are we going to provide like upgrade, migrate type capabilities from the on-prem to the cloud? Or you could have asked if you want to do it the other way around as well. We should look into that. We don't, like, I don't plan to do things like that for the coming months, but this is an area that if there's enough customer interest in doing that, then that's something that we might need to look at and build. The configuration here, as you guys got a taste in the demos, configuration is pretty simple, just a bunch of properties, pretty much. The complexity is really more on the back end, configuring KCD and things like that. Yes?
If we want to get tested,
yeah. If you want to start testing the cloud deployment, you have two options. Either touch base with me after the presentation, we'll get you on the private preview program, or wait a couple weeks and we'll have it you know, for the general public. It's really coming quickly.
At least this will be the version before the version.
Yes. Great. Okay, so you got that one. So the question was, is that going to be available only for AAD premium customers? That's the plan right now. The preview program is not. That's open to everyone. But once we go like GA, which will take a few good months for that to happen, That's you know, turns into a licensing business issue. Yeah, the plan is for that to be on the premium SKU. If you're watching, you know, if you're on top of the recent development, there's, you know, obviously the EMS, Enterprise Mobility Suite, Brad Anderson was talking about that in the keynote session. And EMS gives you a license to AAD premium as well. So anyways, so the short answer is yes to premium customers. Additional questions?
Yeah, did you have to, when you were showing that last example, did you have to do some kind of DNS configuration and verification in order to get the size to?
Yes, okay, yeah, so you got that one as well. Yes, the question was, in the last example, did we do any DNS magic to do that, which I didn't show in the demo? The answer is yes, you need to do that. As I said, there's two options. You have the simple option, which is you don't want to deal with DNS and you just want to use sort of the built-in application proxy URL and certificate, which is kind of what I did in the demo there. You get that ugly URL with like msappproxy.net and all of that. If you do that, you don't have to do any DNS magic. I think many enterprise customers eventually will want to use, just like in the on-prem version, will want the user experience to be different and to, you know, to really make sense and have things like HTTPS, you know, myapp.contoso, for example, if your company is Contoso, as opposed to msappproxy.net. In that case, just like in the on-prem case, you will have to do, you know, your own DNS and certificate for that.
Okay.
So I think the beauty with the cloud is you have that flexibility, these two options that didn't exist in the on-prem case. Yes?
What kind of high availability options are going to be for the on-prem connector?
What kinds of high availability options are going to be for the on-prem connector? Good question. It's stateless, as I said. So. It's not like we kind of built like any like built-in features or anything like that for high availability for like farm of things like that. I think it'll just be a matter of like customers will have to install, just like with some of the web application proxy or even ADFS today. People install like maybe like a redundant instance of it, and they do like health monitoring. You will need to do some basic health monitoring. We will help you with that, with things like SCOM packs, for example, and things like that. But at the end of the day, I think the SLA will be that the cloud stuff will be monitored and like, you know, backed and all that by Microsoft. And the connector piece, you will have to do your own SCOM pack or whatever else. Health monitoring.
Could you just have two of them on-premise?
Say again, I missed the last.
You showed three on-prem on the slide, didn't you? You showed a slide where you had two in one site and one in another site.
Yes. Yeah, but what was...
My question was just, do you need to do anything special to have two in one site?
Oh, I see. No, you don't need to have anything special. They're stateless. You just install, you know, another one, and that's pretty much it. Typically, you would do that just like the gentleman was saying on different branches. Yes?
What about the authorization, making sure that you don't have somebody, a rogue IT, standing up a connector in your environment? Maybe required to be domain joined and authorized in AD?
Yeah, okay. So I think the question was, what about authorization and how do you make sure you don't have too many connectors? Is that what you said on the environment?
A rogue connector, because effectively you're making a backdoor. So if somebody could stand up.
Right, okay. Yeah, you get the question. Right. So the question is, the question boils down to what makes the connector trusted, really? And so, yeah, we should kind of take a deeper look at the details there, but there's like a trusted channel and like a trusted sort of like a boot or spin up of the connector and like a registration flow from the connector and the cloud application proxy with some certificate exchange there to establish that trust. And from that point on, the connector is, you know, it's considered to be registered and trusted in the, you know, with the application proxy.
It's trusted in terms of the tenant you've got it in an address, right?
Exactly.
I'm talking about on my premises. Suppose a rogue IT goes and stands up their own Azure Active Directory tenant and then puts a connector in. How do I keep that connector off my network?
All right. How about we take it offline, because I'm not sure I totally follow. But it seems like a good topic to discuss offline. Maybe one last question, because we'll have...
Last I checked, I didn't find any details, guidance on publishing Exchange or SharePoint on TechNet. Did I miss it, or... there are lots of stuff written by MVPs, but
right. Yeah, the question was about like the documentation on TechNet on Exchange Publishing. You know, I don't know. I'll have to look into that. I'll look into that. I know some documentation is coming. There's like work on that all the time with respect to Exchange specifically. I don't know, but I'll take an action to look into that. Maybe let's take one more. Link translation is supported today in the on-prem version, and it will be supported in the cloud as well. Not right now, but that's coming as well. Link translation inside the body is something we don't currently support, at least in the version that's out there in Windows Server. That's coming, and we're actually looking to have a deeper discussion with customers to kind of understand the use cases and all that. So I'd be interested in having a side conversation with you. Let's continue to have the questions maybe, you know, offline so that we'll give a chance to the next speaker to kind of get organized here. So thanks a lot.